The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
Hello, it's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC, brought to you by The Athletic UK. My name's Sammy James, and welcome to our latest big interview episode. We're joined today by Fulham and US men's national team centre-back stalwart, Mr. Tim Ream. So excited to have him on the podcast today. We're going to be chatting to him all about his memories at Fulham, his new renaissance on social media, his endeavours outside of Fulham, and his thoughts all about Marco Silva's exciting team, which is currently tearing up the Championship. And here to chat to Tim with me today is Mr. Farrell Monk.
Good evening, Sammy.
And Jack Kelly.
Hello, everyone.
So before we get into the interview, just to say that if you're new to Fulhamish, please make sure you subscribe to get our twice weekly analysis on all things FFC. And of course, as I mentioned, we are partnered with The Athletic UK. And if you want 33% off the regular subscription, go to theathletic.com/Fulham Pod. But without further ado, let's meet Tim Ream. Tim Ream, welcome to Fulhamish.
Thank you for having me. A pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours, Tim. Great to have you on. Obviously, international duty at the moment. As we speak, you just got a 1-1 draw against Canada. So how's the trip abroad been? I think a lot of us Fulham fans didn't expect you to make the trip after the injury you got against Hull, but you bounced back pretty quick.
It's been all right. It's been crazy. We've never experienced 3 games in a window before. So it's been a little bit hectic, traveling the day before down to El Salvador and traveling the day after. You're in the country for 48 hours and then back to the States. So it's been wild, racking up a lot of air miles, but yeah, healthy. I came through that injury, pretty quick, which was obviously pleasing for myself.
Cool. Well, look, we'd love to ask you all about your VSS initiative, your podcast, and obviously I think we'll get it stuck into the current season and the US men's national team as well. We've got some questions from listeners as well who have got in touch throughout the podcast, Tim. I'm going to start off with one of them now, because I think it's the burning question for a lot of Fulham fans with you, Tim, is Richard Bamber asked, what prompted Tim to become a social media personality after all these years? You're suddenly Mr. Twitter as far as Fulham's concerned. So what's the reason?
You know what? It's easy and it's hard to explain. So I had someone who I was just getting dogs abuse from, and it was one of those that it was a random profile, an anonymous profile. And I just kind of gotten sick of it. And so I kind of had a little nibble back, and kind of put him to rights, so to speak. And he eventually blocked me, unblocked me, came back and called me a racist. And I just wasn't having it. And I just thought, you know what, like, people don't know me. I've stayed quiet. I've stayed private, for as long as I have. And that's for a reason. And then this whole thing with, the podcast and this initiative with VSS started. And I just thought, why not engage people? And I'd rather do it in a positive manner, in a positive way. And listen, as players, we've felt just as much as everyone else the disconnect and not having fans in stadiums and at grounds and feeling that love and even the negativity at times when it's warranted. So I just thought, why not engage people, see how people are doing, if they want to have a little pop at me, have a pop at me. But if it's unwarranted, I'm going to have a pop back, because I just, in this day and age, I think it's hard. And the more people have to say negatively towards players, the more they tend to shut down. And I'm not saying that we can't have a back and forth, you know, in a constructive way. But it the social media aspect just turns people off. And in a way, we've always been taught to kind of just let it be, and we're not really, we almost feel like we're not allowed to have our say when it comes to a lot of things. And I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to change the narrative here. And it's drummed up a lot of interest for the other things that I'm doing, which has been nice. But really, it was just a way to engage people again and engage fans and kind of have that connectivity back.
Let's go back to the start now. What was it like when you joined from Bolton to Fulham? Firstly, under Kit, and that first season, there was a lot of change, and you went from, you know, Stuart Gray in the middle of it, caretaker, and then Slavisa eventually coming in. Must have been a bit of a change for you.
Yeah, it was a huge change. I mean, you talk about, I'll go even further back, moving from New York to Bolton. That's a culture shock, and if you want to. I mean, that's putting it lightly. And I love my time there. It was, you know, it was fantastic. It was a great taste, first taste for me of English football. And, but I've never shied away from when I think it's time to move on, it's time to move on. And I'm not afraid to, you know, to uproot things and find new challenges. And, you know, when I was, you know, in the 11th hour, kind of switched over and moved to Fulham. I was that close to going to QPR, and it was, you know, it was back and forth there for a while. But as soon as I heard that, you know, Fulham were interested, it was a no brainer for me with the history of Americans at the club, American owners, it just felt right. And I'd always loved in the two seasons, from watching the games, but in the seasons playing against them in the championship, I'd always loved the cottage. There was, it just had that feel and that air about it. And, it was just somewhere I wanted to be. And from watching, you know, McBride to Dempsey to Bocanegra, it was just somewhere that I had to play. I just felt like I had to play. And it was an adjustment for sure. I mean, it was a lot better moving down south, to London from up north. It definitely had a more New York feel, you know, and it just, yeah, it was a struggle. Listen, when you change managers, it's a struggle, mentally, you know, you're not sure whether you're coming or going. And I think that's pretty well documented in my case when Slavisa came in.
Yeah. You talk about Slavisa coming in, obviously we finished 20th, in your first season, and then to go from there to the playoffs the season after, what changed in that team?
He told me to leave. And then I told him I wasn't going to leave. So I don't know. Like, there wasn't much that changed. I mean, obviously there was a lot of players that changed, but I think he finally got the guys in that he could work with. I just think we were a hodgepodge before that. And when he, you know, we brought in the guys, you know, Niskins, Dennis, Sonny Aluko at the time. He kind of started to shape the squad, and players that had good technical ability and could play really, really nice football. And I think that was the biggest change. You know, we obviously still went through some growing pains, in his first full season, but we had a clear idea of what he wanted. And we knew, and we had a good structure, and we knew what he wanted, and we just had a good feel off the pitch as well, and a lot of good friendships. I mean, I haven't even mentioned, you know, guys like Kevin McDonald and Stefan Johansson coming in that window as well. So, it was just an unbelievable collective of players, kind of pulling all in the same direction, and obviously it culminated in a spot in the playoffs and then heartbreak.
Yeah, that was a pretty tough one to take against Reading. But I almost think, you know, all good things happen for a reason, and we got what happened next year and that day against Villa at Wembley. And we had Marcus Bestinelli on this podcast after he left a couple of months ago. And he spoke about that day being the best day of his career. I assume it's well up there for you. I remember so many times that day that the white wall screaming "Ream" at you. I mean, what was that day like? It must have been just magnificent.
I mean, even the memories, I mean, I have goosebumps right now thinking about it. Like you look back on that day, and I don't know that you can describe it, to be honest with you. I mean, I coming out for warmups and the place was absolutely rammed. And you look up, you look up behind our goal and behind where we were warming up. And I had the feeling right away that like, it was just comfort. And that's the first thing that I remember, just feeling comfortable going out for the warmups. And I don't know what it was. But even during the run in, we still discuss it, Kev, Steph, Betts, we still talk about it to this day. Like, there was just a feeling every time we went out that we weren't going to lose. And so to go into the playoff final, we still had that feeling. Like, there was no nerves. There was nothing that, looking around at all the guys that said, right, this could go either way. There was just a confidence that no matter what was going to happen, that we were going to come out on top. And obviously TC slotting the ball home, the place was mental, and the scenes afterwards. I mean, how can you? I don't think there's anything from the celebrations will ever be forgotten.
We have this question that comes in from Baza, going back to the Ream thing. How does it feel every time the Hammersmith End scream out "Ream"? And he goes on to say that his daughter, partly the reason why she comes to Fulham is just to enjoy shouting "Ream" every single time.
Nah, you know what? I honestly, like during the game, all the guys give me trouble for it, because in training they've started to do the same thing. You know, if I touch the ball, I got Alfie in my ear just shouting my name. And then as soon as I walk into the training ground in the morning, he's one of the first in, and I'm one of the first in. And that's all he says. It's a fist bump and the my name in that manner. So, in the match, you try to shut things out. I think it's been a lot. I've heard it maybe a little bit more now this season with fans being back in, and also just because I've come to the point where I'm kind of playing a little bit more free. I'm having a lot more fun. I'm playing with a smile on my face and kind of taking everything in, because I'm just at that point in my career. Not anywhere close to retiring, but it's something that you're so focused as you go through that I don't notice it. I love the one, before the game even starts. My usual, sprint into the box towards the Hammersmith. That's the one that really kind of sets the tone for me and gets me going. But I've really started to notice it more this season than in previous seasons, and I think it's just a nice connection, and I think that's again going back to one of the first things we talked about here is that connection with the fans. And it wasn't always that way, admittedly, but it's so nice to have, for sure.
You've been here for 6 years now, and we've had so many managers within that time. How do you find that sort of motivation to work under a new manager with new philosophy and new ideas?
I just look at it as a challenge. I look at every season, every 6 months, because you look at transfer windows and we're constantly, bringing guys in if we need it or potentially not. But, I look at it as a challenge every time. It's stressful. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit that every time there's a change in manager, except for this one, I don't know why. I just felt so calm with this one. Again, maybe that's just because of my age and where I'm at in my career. But all the other ones, I've going back to even my days in Bolton, I've always just been, a manager comes in and I think, okay, this is a challenge. But like before it starts, like the first week, I just, because of it, it's new ideas, new personalities. it's really taken a toll. And it takes a mental toll. And I remember specifically when Slavisa came in the first week, first 2 weeks of training, I just thought to myself, what am I doing here? Like, I have no business playing under this guy. I felt off the pace, mentally just not right. Physically felt like I was just way in over my head. Even though I had been playing majority of the games. So it's difficult, but I do like, I've started to, you know, kind of understand better and tell myself that they're just, it's just another challenge. It's just another, you know, another, you know, fork in the road, and you either go down fighting or, you know, you succeed and win a manager over. And thankfully, majority of my career, I mean, pretty much all of my career, I've been able to do that, whether that's, you know, in the first couple of weeks or, you know, it takes a month or two time. But yeah, I've had a lot of ups and downs when managers come in. But, you know, thankfully, I've kind of always pulled through that and just looked at it as a challenge.
And how has that dynamic in the dressing room changed? You know, it's gone from, I guess, people like Kevin McDonald and Steph Joe being the leaders, and now you're wearing the armbands. I imagine now your role is to kind of nurture some of the younger players in the dressing room and teach them the kind of the whereabouts and the pitfalls, like you said, you had under Slavisa, where you know, you lack confidence or you lack motivation or drive. Have you noticed a kind of like mentality shift for yourself now that you're one of the older heads in the squad?
Listen, I've always been an older head in the squad. I think I've been the oldest guy on the squad since Ragnar Sigurdsson was here, and that's going back. I mean, yeah. Other than when I first came in, I'm pretty sure since we lost to Reading, I've been the oldest guy in the team, and I've been here for 6 years. So that tells you how young we were at the time, and kind of tells you how old we are now. But yeah, there's always been a, you know, a voice or a few voices within the, you know, the squad, but there's always been a kind of a collective, you know, guys look at certain guys for, you know, Kev, for example, you know, he was the voice, you know, he had a lot to say, and he was a big personality. Myself, you know, I'd like to think guys looked at me as less of a voice and more of a, you know, more of a doer, you know, look to me as an example of what to do, maybe not what to say, because I didn't say much. And now there has been a shift, but I think there's been a shift within the whole group. You know, there's different manager, different kind of different tactics, different ideas. And, you know, there's still a group of us that are looked upon as leaders. I just happen to be wearing the armband, you know, during the matches. And yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed it. You know, I kind of have had that role with the national team now for the last couple of years. And maybe not playing as much as I would like, but you know, I enjoy kind of having conversations and relating to the young guys as much as I possibly can, even though, you know, young Fabi is closer in age to my 7-year-old than he is to me. But you know, he's probably got more in common with him, but you know, that this is the modern game. You have to be able as a leader and someone who's looked up to and kind of been there, done that, you know, you have to be able to relate to the young guys as much as the guys that are around your, you know, your own age. And, you know, I enjoy it. I do. I relish, you know, having the armband, and I relish, you know, guys coming to me and asking for opinions and help and any advice that they may need.
This question came in from Ryan Byrne, and I think that follows on a little bit nicely. Do you have a favorite player that you've paired with? I assume at centre back, rather than a strike partner.
Can we name all 16 or 17 that I've played with?
insane the amount of centre backs you've played with during your time.
Yeah, I don't know that I have a favorite. I just think they've all been so different. I think if you look at the different points of my time here and the different points that these guys have come in, I mean, I loved I enjoyed playing next to Kallis because he's a freak athlete and could cover the amount of ground that I don't think I could ever cover, and can jump through through the ceiling of a 12-foot high roof. Dennis, I enjoyed playing with Dennis because we went on that crazy run and it culminated in a playoff final. I still curse him to this day for getting the red card, but it all ended up all right. And you know what? I've enjoyed playing with Tosin now. Him and I didn't really get a chance last year. And that's okay. But I've really enjoyed, playing with him these first couple months. And we've really, we really developed a good partnership and good communication. I don't like to pick favorites because they are all different. And I know that probably annoys the hell out of whoever asked the question. Sorry. But yeah, they're just, like I said, they're different. And I enjoy myself having to adapt to the different guys, because I think it makes me better as a player to understand the different characteristics of a guy like Tosin to a guy like Kallis to a guy like Adoy. Because they're all so very different. And I think that makes me a better player. But at the same time, I enjoy helping those guys out and making them, better players at the same time.
This question comes from Rick Cardis. He says, how does Tim feel about being part of the great Fulham America tradition? And who's his favorite American to play for Fulham?
It's a great question. I had someone asked me the other day on Twitter, and it was actually a sly one. I don't think many people saw it. They asked me where I rank myself amongst some of the Americans that have played here. And I said, and I stand by the statement, I'm proud to be in the group. I'd probably put myself pretty low on the list of Americans who have played here, just because I have that kind of warped negative viewpoint of myself, because I always think I can do better and I try to strive for perfection, even though I know it's not attainable. So I love that I'm part of the group of Bocanegra, Dempsey, Keller, McBride, and even some of the younger guys who have kind of come through and moved on already. So yeah, I think the one guy I always looked up to, not that he played my position, but obviously I played with Bocanegra, so I looked up to him, but McBride for sure, who's actually in camp right now with us, being the GM with the US team. But he went to the same university that I did. I went to the same one that he did, played football there and kind of followed in his kind of path. Going to the same university and then making my way over to Europe and eventually ending up at Fulham. So yeah, he's the one that I probably always kind of had one eye on as a youngster.
I can't agree. You're low down the list there, Tim. I can't. I mean, it's a really high bar, isn't it? It's an extremely high bar. Clint did what he did against Juventus. Brian McBride was a legend, and there's so many more. But I think there's generations of kind of full Americans, and you're very, very much like a recent generation and right at the top of it, Tim. Honestly, I think what's great as well is I think you carried, there was a danger of Fulham losing the kind of American connection, but you came in and actually have almost retained it. Now Anthony's here. We were linked with Reggie Cannon. He nearly signed for us in the window, which would have made another American at Fulham. So I think you carried on the tradition. I think you actually had a very important part to play.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't disagree, but I just think there's levels to this. There's just differences, right? McBride and Dempsey played in those great premiers. Bocanegra the same. Some of the keepers that have come through here, Hahnemann and Casey Keller, there's a few that didn't do so well here, but I just think, I won't name names. Sorry. I won't do that. I just think it's great to be a part of that. And I don't hold myself, listen, a lot of footballers, they hold themselves up to high esteem and high pedestals, and I'm not one of those. And I think that's, it's important to be humble. And I've always been that way. And it's great to be in that conversation of Americans at Fulham. But again, is it because I've earned two promotions, but I've also been in a part of two relegations? You know, is it because of the number of games I played? Well, it's a different league. You know, I've played in the championship with Fulham for how many years now? This is my fourth out of six, right? Yeah. And there's a lot of games in the championship. Now that takes a lot of work. There's no doubt, you know, to be fit and stay healthy. But yeah, I mean, listen, if you guys want to put me there, like, I'll take it, but I'm not going to put myself there by any means. And I don't think I'll ever do that. So.
Well, look, it's worked for you staying humble all these years. So you carry on doing that. We'll carry on championing you from the rooftops, Tim. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And afterwards, Tim, we'd love to learn a little bit more about the endeavors you've been doing outside of Fulham.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here with Farrell Monk, Jack Kelly, and we are talking to Fulham centre-back and US men's national team player Tim Ream. Loving your first part and talking about your Fulham memories, but I think we want to come on to some of the other parts of your life, which maybe exist outside the white lines of the Craven Cottage pitch. And recently, you've been very involved with an organisation called Virtual Soccer Schools. Would love to know what it is and how you got involved in it.
My boys go to school, obviously, in Cobham at the international school. And one of their teachers, mad about football, he runs another kind of initiative called Surrey Soccer Schools, which is an all-inclusive, you know, it's a play for everyone. Come out, there's no, you know, it doesn't matter what level you are. You know, come out, have fun, have a good time. It's all about, you know, enjoying yourself and not putting the pressure on the kids. So anyway, he's come to me with an idea, during lockdown. And obviously we touched on this in the first part, you know, the podcast, that there wasn't much interaction between fans, between players. There was no connection really. And I don't know about you guys, but I mean, personally, not being able to even play, and you're just getting on a bike or running around the streets, mentally, that was hard. And he came up with this idea, right? What if we start this program and take it virtual? And it basically just, you go into schools, instead of doing public speaking, you're doing it virtually. And he said, you know, I have this idea of getting players, bringing them on board and supporting the children and school children who are either stuck at home still because of lockdowns, or are in school and not able to go to football matches and see, you know, the players and the footballers that they want to see, and have that personal interaction. He said, I have this vision of bringing you guys into their classrooms. And I thought, that's interesting. And so we've just been working on it. We started out, you know, and it's not just a UK thing. I know we've done a lot recently with schools up and down the UK. You know, during preseason, we did a big kind of festival and you know, hit 170 schools over the course of 4 days, which was crazy. It was over like 3,600 kids taking part. And it's just, you know, we get on, you know, I get on for 20 to 30 minutes and the kids can ask whatever they want to ask. And, you know, at the time it was, you know, you're going to get your, obviously your football questions. Oh, who's your favorite player? Who's the greatest? Who's the best player you've ever played against? But the schools and the teachers, we and ourselves, we had this kind of this goal of supporting their mental health and their well-being and the topics that they may not feel comfortable discussing on a regular basis, but giving them a platform to ask a professional athlete how they feel. And how I feel, and how, you know, we've had Joe Bryan on, and Cyrus, and you know, I've had Christian Pulisic on, and Zach Steffen. So it's just an opportunity for the kids to meet, in some cases, their idols and people they look up to, while talking about important topics that are affecting the world today, in bullying, online abuse, you know, mental health, stress, anxiety. And it's really just taken off. And you know, we started in Abu Dhabi. We've been in Egypt. We've been in Saudi Arabia. We've been in the Congo. So it's been impressive. And I've really enjoyed, you know, speaking to the kids and helping them along, but also sharing my own struggles. Because I think a lot of times, you know, kids especially don't see the struggles that adults go through. And then when it's adults and athletes and people that they see on the telly, or, you know, see running around on the pitch, on Saturdays, I think it really resonates and they then are able to speak up more and speak about their own, you know, their own troubles and their own experiences.
It obviously must have been a whirlwind, considering that you only started in lockdown last year. Do you have a vision for what you want VSS to be? Do you have a goal to reach a certain amount of number of children? Are you targeting particular criteria for disadvantaged children? Where do you see this going?
Listen, we started big, and we kind of did international schools with, you know, with regards to only him and I only speaking English. We don't, you know, speak too many other languages. And so, yeah, we started in, you know, international school in, like I said, in Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, Egypt. And we don't have a specific target. It's just, eventually we would love to have it go global. I mean, we have a few different things that we're discussing right now. One with, you know, potentially another Fulham legend in Louis Saha, you know, potentially him kind of jumping on board and helping us reach out to schools in France. So yeah, it's, I wouldn't say there's anything, any one target group. It's definitely, we're looking at targeting school age children, whether that's 8 years old to, you know, 14, 15, 16. And we've had all those, you know, we had all those in the 170 schools, during our little festival in preseason. So we're right exactly where we want to be. And we have a few exciting things kind of coming up, a few more exciting announcements with ambassadors. And, it's just really wanting the kids to feel comfortable being able to speak about their own mental health and where it is, because it's such, you know, you're seeing more and more athletes speak about it, because it isn't, it's important. I mean, you know, the fact that Joe Bryan has come out and spoken about it at length, Naomi Osaka, you know, speaking about it with the tennis and how she's been feeling. So it's something that, you know, we're seen as athletes as these almost robots, like robot-like, a lot of the times, and that isn't the case. And we want, you know, the kids to understand that, and that it's okay to speak about these things.
Yeah, you mentioned mental health, and obviously Joe Bryan did that fantastic piece, I think, with ESPN about it. And is that something you talk about with the group of players at Fulham, mental health and how it affects, you know, not playing, maybe missing out on the team, getting promoted and not playing as many games as you would have wanted. Is that something you talk about as a group?
I'd say there's probably a handful of us that are comfortable talking about it. I think some others are a little bit more reluctant, and that's okay. You know, eventually, you know, they may come around or they may not. They may be just absolutely fine to not discuss it. We do have a guy that comes in every week that you can go and see and kind of bounce ideas off of and bounce you know, your troubles and you know, the things that you're feeling, which has been great. You know, I've not felt the need to you know, use him more than once or twice. But I know guys do go regularly and see him. And listen, if your mind isn't right, and I've always said this, if your mind's not right off the field, you're going to be a disaster on it. And it's so important that your physical well-being and your mental well-being are hand in hand. And I think more and more guys are starting to realize that and starting to take advantage of, you know, speaking to people about it and, you know, getting them into the right mindset to be at their peak performance.
Yeah. I think it's so important. And maybe, I don't know if you guys quite like acknowledge this in the dressing room, but I think in the likes of yourself, Joe Bryan in particular, talking about mental health, I think fans have got better at it. There's a lot of fundraising initiatives at Fulham for Campaign Against Living Miserably. And I think it makes such a difference when your role models, which are you guys on the pitch, are openly talking about this. And I think it's such a vital thing that you guys are doing. So, and it's really nice to see that some of the Fulham boys really taking a lead on that and making sure it's well known that, you know, it's fine for your mental health not to always be great. You started a new podcast called Indirect with broadcaster Steve Schlanger. You recently interviewed new Norwich signing Josh Sargent. How did this come about? Is this a trial run for when you retire and joining the Fulhamish podcast? You know, what was the what was the process behind this? I've really enjoyed some of the episodes that you guys have done.
Honestly, it was crazy. My agent called me and was like, "Hey, listen, this guy's been emailing me, asking if you want to, you know, potentially do a podcast." And I was like, "Well, I've not really been into podcasts, so to speak. And I've not really been into the kind of the whole media thing, but it started to kind of go hand in hand with the social media." And I was just like, why not? Like, listen, you can do a podcast and either people are going to listen or they're not. And you can't make them listen. You can't make them like your opinions. But he kind of pitched it to me that, listen, there's not many active professionals doing their own kind of podcast. And I was like, right, okay. And so really he just wanted to try to do an episode a week. Just talking about the hot topics that are going on. It's not just about US soccer. It just happens that we have a list of guests that we want to get on. And because of, you know, who I play with and who I know, a lot of them will potentially be US soccer guys, along with, you know, guys at Fulham and, you know, beyond. But yeah, it is something to kind of just kind of dip my feet into, and see kind of what the podcast side and potentially the media side is, because, you know, him and I still, you know, have discussions about he's right now doing the US Open tennis. So it's, you know, and he's kind of given me little bits of feedback here and there on kind of his schedule and what he does. And, yeah, he pitched it to me and I said, you know what, why not? My kids are all going to be in school now. I don't have a you know, all three of them at home. There's no more lockdown. I have a little bit extra time, and it's interesting because I end up recording them late, probably 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, our time, because he's based in my hometown of St. Louis. That was the other connection. So he was like, yeah, I'm, you know, from St. Louis, I went to the same university. And so it's just kind of snowballed from there. I've enjoyed it. It can be stressful sometimes when you can't get guests on and they're like, yeah, I'll come on. And then they're like, no, I can't come on. And I'm like, oh, geez, you're killing me. But Yeah, it's been enjoyable. It's been something different, like I said, and kind of, like I said, goes hand in hand with the whole social media thing and kind of just drumming up interest with that, with the social media, with VSS and, you know, kind of just pushing all that out.
Yeah, exactly. Can't wait for the Clint Dempsey episode, for all the Brian McBride episode. Indirect is the name of the podcast. I imagine most people are listening to, on a podcast player right now. So if you haven't listened to Tim's podcast yet, just give it a search, get subscribed. And it's a really, really great show. Right, we're going to take another break. And then we've got some burning questions about Fulham and this season. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy Farrell and Jack talking to the one and only Mr. Tim Ream today. Loving your work so far, Tim. Let's get stuck into this season then. As at the time of recording, Fulham flying high, top of the table, 13 points after five games. It's been a brilliant, brilliant start to the season under Marco Silva. And I think that's what where I want to start, Tim. Just your overall feeling about how these first five games have gone. We were hopeful going into this season, but I guess you never know. There's a long way to go, but yeah, you couldn't have started much better than that.
I mean, the only way you start better is not dropping points against Middlesbrough the first game, but I think that was a little bit of an eye-opener and a wake-up call for us. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. But I said on Twitter the other day, it's just been purely enjoyable. The fact that they come in and you know, the first thing is say, listen, we want you to play with a smile on your face. We want you guys to have fun. And I think it's pretty evident the way things are going and the way, you know, we're playing on the pitch and you know, in the games that guys are just having fun. And you know, I think it's the best start in 20 some odd years that the club has had. So yeah, I mean, see, they make it enjoyable and the guys are really responding. And it helps to have a squad and the depth that we do that guys can just step in not miss a beat.
How does that compare between the last two promotion campaigns? It's obviously those 2 years we got promoted, but this year we've started even better. How's the feeling between those 2 years and this year so far?
I think the feeling this year is probably similar to the feeling of the second half of under Slavisa. When we just, you know, we lost to Sunderland, obviously had a Christmas do. I'm pretty sure that's public knowledge now. lost to Sunderland, had a Christmas do and didn't lose again until Birmingham away. It's the same feeling. We go into matches and just think, right, we've got too much for teams. There's just too much in the changing room, and too much on the bench coming on for teams to handle. And we know, and it's a, you know, we say every single week that if we match the intensity and the work rate of whoever we're playing, there's nobody that's going to outplay us. That's been the key. It's definitely more the second half of that first promotion under Slavisa that this one is feeling like, if not even better, because we're scoring bunches.
And what's Marco Silva like in training? Is he intense? Is he one who puts an arm around the shoulder? And of course, all that problems with Mitrovic in the summer, we didn't really know what was going to happen with him. And suddenly he signs a 5-year contract and suddenly everything's great at Fulham again.
Yeah, he's both. He is. He knows when to push guys and he knows when to put an arm around. And that's the first thing that I really noticed when he came in. It was, listen, you know, we're going to work. We're going to be out here for an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. And we're going to work our butts off and you may not like it. You may not like some of the things that I have to say, but at the end of the day, it's to help you guys. It's to push you guys. It's to make you guys better. And, you know, as soon as training sessions are over, he's walking around and tapping everybody on the shoulder and putting an arm around them, or, you know, give them a little kick across the shins while we're stretching and just having a chat. And they're good about that. They're good about, you know, creating a real team vibe. You know, making sure that we sit down, and even if we're not stretching after training, we're at least having conversations, talking about anything and nothing. Having lunches together at the training ground where most guys would shoot off. Now we're all sitting down and phones are put away, and just getting that connection amongst everyone. And I think that's been the biggest probably change over the past 3-4 years. Is that, you know, they've come in and they want that connection, and they're happy to push guys and happy to push buttons. But at the same time, they're more than willing to put an arm around guys and make them feel important.
I mean, Fulham's strength and depth at the moment is pretty sensational. You could put two teams out on the pitch, completely different players, and I think both enough are strong enough to be at the very top of the championship. What is that like, though? You know, it's great for us as fans. We love, you know, having all of these different options, but ultimately only 11 players can play. There's some very, very talented people every single week that won't get on the pitch. Is that a hard dynamic?
I think probably last year it would have been, and the year before it would have been a hard dynamic. I think for the most part, guys understand. And you know, the manager has made it very clear that, listen, if you're not playing, he's like, it's not the guys in front of you, that it's not their fault. You know, and they want everyone together and supporting each other. You can be mad at the manager for not picking you, but at the end of the day, we're all trying to go to the same place, and we're all trying to pull in the same direction. And so I think at times it can be difficult, but I think if everyone kind of accepts that it's a long season and there are going to be injuries, case in point, against Hull, that guys are just going to have to be ready. And I think everyone talks about, oh, competition is good. Competition is this, it's that. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, I got Alfie breathing down my neck, you know, for the left center back spot. Tosin's got Alfie breathing down his neck for the right center back spot. I mean, you got Terrence coming back in, heck, and Bobby have obviously come in late from the Gold Cup with preseason and they're pushing. So there's no, you can't take a day off. And I think that's what's pushing guys to the levels that we're at and the levels that we've started. And listen, that can only be good for the rest of the season, right? You got guys pushing you, you're going to be, you know, playing at the top of your ability is, you know, the majority of the time.
I suppose in that regard, that Silva has enough in his bank to think about rotating when fixtures are congested, maybe when players are away from international duty, playing three games in a row and whatnot. Do you feel that you would just have to keep proving your worth every time that he decides to make the odd change here and there and whatnot? I suppose, are you available for Saturday as well? When's your flight home?
is that the real question? we're flying back straight after the game on Wednesday. You know, there's a big group of us in Europe. I think there's, I don't know the number off the top of my head. There's at least 12 of us, that are going to be flying back together. And yeah, we'll land on Thursday afternoon and we'll see. I don't know. It's never really discussed before you get back. I think it all kind of depends on if you play that last game or not, with your internationals. So yeah, we'll see about that one. But yeah, I mean, I think if you can, squad rotation is healthy. Competition is healthy. It keeps guys hungry. It lets them know, listen, you know, you keep working, you're going to get your chance. And then it's up to you to either grab it or know, that you're just kind of giving a guy a spell because he's played a ton of games, a ton of minutes. And I think that's where the communication aspect with the staff is so, so important. And guys appreciate that. Guys want to know where they stand. And if they don't, then they start getting antsy. They start getting, you know, their head turned and getting annoyed. But yeah, it's what a problem to have that you can rotate an entire 11 out and probably have the level not drop at all going into a league fixture.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. When Marco Silva was appointed, not only he came in, but also Luis Vermorte, of course, had a spell at the club. What's he like on the training ground?
He's intense. He's intense for sure. He's got the ear of a lot of guys, because we know he's been here. He's done it. I believe he was promoted in 2001, right, with Tigana. Guys know who he is, what he's done, what he's about, and he has a lot of input into tactics and players playing in certain positions. And it's been a joy to have him. Like I said, the entire staff has been so enjoyable to work with. And he's just he brings kind of a fun personality. Where you have the manager who's a little bit more serious, but can have a little bit of a joke. Boa brings a more kind of laid back, but also intense. When we're working, it's time to work. He's got no problem kind of mucking it up and joining in the 5v2s and the rondos and, really, really enjoying himself, which has been fun.
I imagine he's still pretty handy in the 5v2s and the rondos, Louis. But I imagine that some of the old quality of the dead snake's still very much there.
Yeah, he still has it. He's not quite as sharp, but just before we left, he had a few touches and guys were like, "Wait, what?" Like, couldn't actually believe that he had pulled it off. But it's fun when he jumps in. It doesn't happen often, so when it does, it's there's a lot of hooting and hollering going on and a lot of banter flying around.
Yeah, it's great seeing back at the club. One of my early day heroes for sure, Louis Beau. So look, you guys obviously want to make it back to the Premier League next year. You played quite a bit in the first Premier League season. You didn't play, I imagine, anywhere near as much as you would have wanted to play in the Premier League last year. Do you feel like you've got a point to prove at the highest level still? Should we make it back? It's not guaranteed. It's not assumed. But if we did, you must feel like you want to, prove some people wrong.
Yeah, but I think that's every season. I don't think that changes no matter how old you are, where you're at in your career. At least not for me. I can't tell you the number of times that I've been written off, even at this club, by those that I'm sure many of you have come in contact with and many of you know. And that's okay. I've always come in with this mentality that every season I have to prove myself, right or wrong. History is history, and it's what have you done for me lately? And that's the way I look at things. So, was last year not great in terms of where I wanted to be and what I wanted to be doing and how much I wanted to be playing? Yeah, of course not. But right now I'm just completely focused on this season because that's what's the here and now. And it doesn't matter if we don't get promoted, then it's a mute point. If we do, then I have to prove myself all over again. And can or will I be able to do that in this kind of new system under a new manager with this squad? Who knows? I can't predict the future, but yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm always out to prove people wrong. I'm always out to prove myself wrong. There are times when you think, and I said this before, there are times that you think, it might be coming close. And then, you start to kind of find your form and you're like, no, what are you talking about? You still got a good 4 or 5 years left. I'm out to prove people wrong, every single season. And if I get that chance next year, then obviously that's what my goal will be. If we get promoted and if we don't, I'll still be here proving that I still belong on the team and in the starting 11 in the championship.
Well, we certainly believe that you belong in the starting 11.
Well, are you sure?
Well, sure? Certainly in this foursome right now, that's for sure. has Silva helped you adapt your game at all? Or is he saying, look, you're the type of player exactly what I need right now? I mean, it's great to see you doing your sort of trademark, if you can say, ventures past the halfway line, getting past strikers who are chasing after you, even as the most experienced player, for what you said as seems like forever, has he even told you to adapt your game at all?
Yeah, it's funny. I went in and had a conversation with him, and after the first, the second week he was here, and said, listen, I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what your plans are, but I have a lot of things that I still want to accomplish at 33 years old, going on 34. And I want to be playing games. I don't feel I'm at the age where I just want to sit back and enjoy the last couple of years. I don't believe in that. And as soon as that becomes the case, then it's time for me to be done. And, there's national team implications and all that. And he said, whoa, he's like, no, he's like, you are absolutely part of my plans. He's like, that's it. That's end of discussion. And so, yeah, here we are. And the biggest thing is just playing quicker. I think we all are well aware of kind of the last couple of seasons, how we've kind of slowed things down a bit. And he just wants guys to play quicker, and it's clearly paid dividends. Not just myself, but I feel like I play better when we play quicker. It's a lot easier to make decisions when things are moving at a quicker pace. For me, for whatever reason, don't ask me why. Most people will say the exact opposite. When things look, when things are slowed down, it's easier. But I just, the way I play the game and read the game, it just seems like it's coming so easy and natural when things are moving quick. And so, yeah, I mean, as soon as he said that, I thought, no, this is perfect. This is exactly me. This is exactly how I want to be playing. Quite obviously, it's how the majority of the squad want to play, because it's it's been a breath of fresh air to start the season.
Yeah, and it's so attractive to watch as well. And one player who's key in that team is Fabio Carvalho. And look, we've had youngsters like Sessegnon, Heidman, Moussa Dembele. How does he rank for you in terms of his potential? And what do you think his ceiling is?
I mean, the kid's up there. There's no doubt about it. I think if you look back at the first promotion season and with Sess, he had that knack for being in the right place at the right time, didn't he? And I love Sess. I really do. I think, it's a shame kind of how he's kind of stalled out a bit, maybe through no fault of his own, but they're different. And Fabio he's kind of that all around package. He's got the pace. He's not afraid to get into tackles. He's not afraid to track back. And again, Sess was not afraid of any of those either. Maybe shied away from contact a little bit. But Fabi is just, I mean, he's up and down. What was it? Was it had to have been Stoke when he tracked back, tackled the guy, and all of a sudden we were off on a counterattack and put their right side center back just on the ground. Because he was taking too many touches. And it's that type of thing that you can't teach. And as an 18-year-old kid, the fact that he has it, I'm sorry, he's 19 now, isn't he? He just turned 19. The fact that he has that in his game already, and he's not just this nice player and this nice, footballer that only wants it his way and wants to be able to touch the ball and dribble and, do different moves it's fun to watch him. It's fun to play on his side, to be honest with you, because I can tell him where to go and where to stay and where to be, and he knows that I'm going to try to do my darndest to get him the ball every single time just so I can watch him do the things that he does. But yeah, he's got to be up there as one of the best kind of 18-19 year olds that I've played with in my career, and quite obviously I played with a good few here.
Yeah, such exciting times, a really exciting season in store ahead, Tim. And it's been magic to talk to you, honestly. We've really, really enjoyed spending an hour in your company. So I guess all that remains to say is thank you so much for giving up some time on your international break to chat to Fulhamish.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.